Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. In 1980, more than 80% of African-American college students attended historically black colleges or universities, also known as HSBCUs. Today's figure is closer to 10%, and some of these schools are plagued by declining enrollments, faculty layoffs. The list goes on, but with more attention than ever on the racism students may face on predominantly white college campuses, are graduating high school seniors giving historically black schools a second look? For the rest of today's show, we'll be talking about the role of the historically black college in 2016. Call 816-235-2888 if you attended or considered attending a historically black college or university. Why did you go or why didn't you? Was it the right decision? 816-235-2888. I want to start by talking with Dr. Dina Irvin, armed with doctoral research on college access for urban students of color. She started an organization called Black and College Bound. And Dr. Irvin, you were motivated in part by an experience your son had. Is that correct?
I did. My son actually attended one of the most prestigious private high schools in the Kansas City community. And having been in an elite environment for many years, he decided that he wanted to diversify his college experience. And when he shared with the college counselors where he wanted to go or that he was even entertaining or considering an HBCU or schools that were not the big KUMU, they really just kind of threw their hands up and said, we don't have those relationships, and provided absolutely no help. So luckily, as a parent, I happened to be working in the Kauffman Scholars Program, where we provided access for first-generation students to go to college. So I knew what to do and how to do it. I just didn't think I would have that responsibility solely resting on my shoulders when he went to such a well-connected elite high school. And that led me to say, well, if he's not getting the help there, what happens to the average student of color who's in, you know, any other school, especially a private, or especially a public high school?
Do you find it surprising that high school college counselors don't necessarily have the connections with historically black schools?
It's getting a little easier to understand why they do not, because now that schools don't have the budgets or the resources to maintain marketing and sending people way out of the region, you won't see California University recruiters here or Texas HBCU recruiters come but so often, but they do come. And there are some strategic partnerships in place through organizations that have annual college fairs and have a focus on HBCUs. I've even participated. I'm asked to speak a few times a year, even at community colleges that are looking to help their students not just transition into the four-year, but particularly into HBCUs where they may have a better chance of assimilating, getting what they need, getting the supportive environment and nurture that will help them continue on through college graduation.
You yourself attended a historically black college. What guided that decision for you?
To be perfectly honest, I'm born and raised in New York, and I just happened to open an envelope that said I had a full ride scholarship with such a large overpayment. My parents got excited. They started jumping up and down. I really hadn't pursued or tried it because, again, I had no college guidance whatsoever. No college tours, no. I took an ACT when I was on campus because no one told me about an ACT. In New York, we take the SAT. So a lot of just my lack of guidance is kind of what led me to say, if I was a top student in a graduating class of 450 and I was in the top 3 percentile, what happens to the average student that, you know, does not get that information? So that is exactly what led me to say, we've got to do more. We've got to close the gap. We cannot take for granted that people who were doing well academically or struggling academically, people who are well with resources or not, there are so many people that just fall between the cracks because everyone makes an assumption, or as a community, we get them into college, but by the second semester, they're back home.
What assumption is it that people are making?
That the counselors will help them or provide what's needed. And many counselors, especially here across the metro, have not experienced it themselves. We do not have a lot of diversity in those positions, or most of our high school staff may come from colleges right here in the broader Midwest area. So they don't have the networks. They don't have the knowledge or the firsthand experience. I've been in many schools where they have a college room, every banner but an HBCU banner. So again, the knowledge is not common. It's not being passed on. And that is through lack of awareness on many levels.
How do you think your college experience was shaped by the HSBCU, that's historically Black college or university setting?
I had the absolute best experience attending an HBCU. I do have three graduate degrees from a large, predominantly white institution, and there I was just a number. Even at the graduate level, very little help, very little support. You really have to avail yourself of the resources and find people and attach yourself. And that's not everyone's personality, especially when you're 17 or 18 and fresh out of your parents' house. So that is another reason that Black and College Bound, we actually do preschool through PhD. We coach doctoral students. We work with people considering graduate programs, because I found that you need even more help and support at that level, because it's really you against the institution. And I can say, even being a part of a doctoral program, I had to call in many networks and many favors, because I was just really getting treated in a way that I wouldn't want anyone to be treated, in terms of calling professors who, you know, had no interest in my topic. The topic, as you mentioned, was African-Americans and college access. Now, you would think that college access, which lends itself to employment, again, in a bi-state area, if an employer can move to the Kansas side of the state line and recruit Shawnee Mission graduates, why would they ever move to the other side of the state line and recruit people from a questionable pipeline? So it's an economic development interest. It's a culture. It's an income. And so many people at high levels who have to mentor you in that process said, well, I don't really have knowledge about that. I don't have knowledge about students of color. It's education. It's economic development. These are across the board. But people were really quick to throw their hands up and not support or assist. And it wasn't until I had to find a lot of professors who deal with Black studies or something random, but they understand the struggle of a Black student, that reached out to help me and support me. So when I went to non-traditional departments, I received so much support. When I defended my dissertation, I mean, they had to go get chairs three times, because I had representation from department heads from everywhere but my core department.
What was your core department?
Business and public administration.
When you were at the undergrad level at a historically Black college, how does that experience contrast with what you just described?
I think that, just given everything we see in media now, you have a lot of young people who have not been taught about how great they are, cultural pride. Anytime someone tries to say, you know, let's expand the curriculum beyond just 28 days of Black History Month, or let's just expose, or let's expand the reading curriculum, there's so much pushback. You look at movies, awards, music, everywhere in the world it tells you that you are the other. And when you go to an HBCU, all of a sudden you are the predominant, and you don't have to assimilate. You don't have to conform. It's okay to be who you are. And then even in that, you find that we are not monolithic. There are so many people who may look like you but have different backgrounds, different exposures, different experiences. So when you even open yourself up to, wow, it's so much bigger than the people who are from my neighborhood or from my block, you start to understand and see the world, your world. And it really kind of puts you in a position of just seeking more. And then you start learning more about yourself and your responsibility. And what you'll see is that HBCUs actually produce the most professionals in every industry whatsoever, as you look at graduates from PWI who are people of color versus HBCUs. You have a pipeline. And I have a friend that always says
PWI, that's predominantly white institutions.
Yes. And, you know, we always say that if you are looking for more diversity in your engineering staff, you go to an HBCU to get engineers of color. So when you are a person of color, you really kind of get access to trajectories that are so much greater, as opposed to being one of many on a large PWI campus where you had 400, 500 people in your English class, your math class. You have to really, you know, turn some flips to kind of stand out in that environment. Whereas at a HBCU, you have alums looking out for you. You have so many people who understand the struggle and understand, if we don't all work together to get you connected, then we are really, you know, kind of losing ground in where we've come as a society.
Dina, we'll be hearing more from you shortly. For now, let's turn to a student who's making a decision about this right now. Erin Hewitt is with us from University Academy. She's a senior, and she's applied to a few historically Black colleges. Hi, Erin.
Hi.
How has your... I want to back up and talk about your high school experience a little, okay?
Okay.
How has your high school experience been, like, academically and socially?
It's been really awesome because I go to a really good high school. My high school has given me so many opportunities. Like, last summer I went to China and I went on a program. It's called Experiment in International Living, and I got to stay in China for a month, and my school paid for everything. So it's been really good. I've had so many opportunities. I'm in National Honor Society. I'm on a step team. I was on the cheerleading team, so I've pretty much done everything. So it's been awesome.
Has race played a significant part in your high school years?
Not really, because most of the students at University Academy are Black. There's maybe two white people and one Asian person, so it's really not an issue for me.
Where have you applied to college specifically?
Well, I focused on my top four schools, which were Howard University, Spelman College, and Clark Atlanta University and Xavier University.
What appeals to you about the idea of attending a historically Black college?
I think because of the opportunities that I will receive at an HBCU, like Ms. Dina said, there's so much more support. And every time I go and I speak to a representative at an HBCU, they're so comforting in telling me about all of my resources and everything that I can use when I go to an HBCU. So, yeah. And then I want to go to an HBCU because I feel like there's so much racism and everything going on at different universities and colleges. So I feel like an HBCU would be the best option for me, because I feel like if I went to a PWI or another college just not predominantly Black, I feel like the racism would probably hinder me or deter me from being all that I can be and accomplishing everything that I want to accomplish. So going to an HBCU would probably be the best option for me.
So, I mean, that is something that I've been really curious about this year with, you know, protests at a lot of college campuses, but really the protests at MU in Columbia put a national spotlight on issues of race on that campus. And it sounds like that's probably your local state school. Mm-hmm. How did you watch that whole drama playing out as someone in high school who's just beginning to, at that point, I'm guessing you were at a pretty early stage in your thought process on where to go to college?
Well, I have a few friends that go to Mizzou, so I kind of talked to them outside of school and got their perception and got their stories of what was happening. I have one friend at Mizzou, his name is Nosa, and he was talking to me about how some of the students were saying really mean things to him, and they were like putting like cotton in certain places of the university and stuff like that. So, yeah.
So that sounds like that's really affecting your decision-making process.
Yeah, and then when I was talking to one of my counselors with another school, they were letting us watch videos that were going on at Mizzou, and it was about like protesting and stuff like that. So I feel like I wouldn't want to experience that at my university or whatever college I decide to go to. So that's why I feel like going to an HBCU would probably be the best option for me.
Dina, is this something that you hear a lot?
Quite a bit. We get a lot of calls because we do pipeline programs. So we prepare students with ACT prep, with college coaching. We do a lot of parent workshops, and we even work with the local universities. Just did a session this Saturday at UMKC for their medical student diversity pipeline, students and parents grades 6 through 12. And I work with them once a month. And I'm a parent. I'm a mother of three college-age students. My oldest just graduated from an HBCU, Prairie View A&M in Texas, and my youngest is at Langston University in Oklahoma. So we help people make that decision, and it's a point of discomfort, but it is a reality. No parent wants their student on a campus and dealing with those types of things, because people don't always know how to handle it well, and you really want the administration to step in and do the things that they need to do to make sure that all children are safe or all students are safe.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, we'll hear a little more about the history of HBCUs, that is, historically Black colleges and universities, and the challenges they're facing today. We'll also take your calls at 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. I'm Gina Kaufman, and you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. We've been talking with Dina Irvin of Black and College Bound, as well as local high school senior Arion Hewitt, about why African-American students are thinking about historically Black colleges in 2016. Now let's turn to DeRico Lynch. He's with us from Lincoln University, a historically Black college in Jefferson City. DeRico, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell me about Lincoln University. There are a lot of people who are probably unfamiliar with it, even though it's in our own backyard.
So Lincoln University is a HBCU that was founded in 1866. It is in Jefferson City, Missouri. We have about over 3,000 students. We're known as the Harvard of the Midwest. Our population, we're actually a unique HBCU because we're 40% African-American, 50% Caucasian students, and then 10% international students. So you get a real unique HBCU experience by attending Lincoln University.
Yeah, those demographics are interesting. I mean, the word historically is part of your title, so there's no, you know, there's no obligation, I guess, to be predominantly Black as a campus right now. But how does that historically Black fit into a campus with the demographics you've just described, where that's still a huge amount of diversity compared with the average? But
so I think the way it fits in is what we like to do is we stay true to our tradition and to our morals and to our motto. But then we create an inclusive experience because we do know that we're not, you know, 99% African-American. So we do try to create an inclusive experience. The one thing that I think all the students do receive at Lincoln University is a holistic experience. So there's different challenges, but it's also a lot of benefits to having such a diverse population. And it also introduces students who are not familiar with the African-American culture to the culture by default.
So you said that part of what you do is stay true to traditions. Can you explain a little more in detail what that means? What traditions?
So for Lincoln, a lot of our students, and this is common amongst a lot of the HBCUs, but students don't typically, all the students aren't going to school to receive a degree. That might not be the reason why they come to college. And I think Lincoln is a pool of opportunity. So a lot of our students might show up because of academics. A lot of our students might just show up because they wanted to get out of their city, to get away from their situation. And the tradition is that Lincoln, if you meet us at the doors, we're going to make sure we walk you through to academic excellence and student success.
When you were talking about the school being founded in the 19th century, what do you know about the story of that founding? I mean, what inspired it?
Well, we were actually founded by the 62nd and 65th Color Infantry. So they were trying to, like a lot of HBCUs, make sure that we had an institution for African-Americans to receive a higher education because it wasn't common in America around those times. So just like majority of the HBCUs, they were founded so we could receive the equal opportunity in the education system.
Does that story affect how people arrive on campus today, what they expect, how the school conducts its business?
I think we still stay true to it because as we do see in the high school systems and in the college systems is it's not as equal or as progressive as we should be. So when students do show up on a HBCU campus, wherever that may be, they know that they're going to have the resources that they need. And I think a lot of times, I didn't graduate from an HBCU. I went to a PWL. I went to Marshall University. But working at an HBCU, I see the difference. You know, at PWIs, in a sense, one department is responsible for making sure minority students succeed. And you might have 50,000 students, but five people on staff that is responsible for impacting and diverse in a campus, where when you go to an HBCU, it's everybody's goal. It's everybody's goal to make sure whoever shows up on this campus that they are successful. And I just think about, you know, like Dr. Z said, when I wasn't an undergraduate at Marshall University, I was a typical student leader. I was Greek. I was an SGA. So I had those resources available to me. But I think about all the students who weren't active and what was their situation like in college and how was their experience different? Where, like I said, at an HBCU, you know that everyone is there for your success and you don't feel you don't have to conform, you don't have to get accustomed, you don't have to figure it out because everyone's there for you. It's like a huge family in a sense.
Earlier in the show, we mentioned a statistic that is that in 1980, more than 80% of college-bound African-Americans chose historically Black colleges, whereas today that number is closer to 10%. What is that about from your perspective?
Well, HBCUs are held accountable across the board as if they were a PWI or if they had an endowment of $2 billion. And the resources aren't the same, but we're still expected to meet those expectations.
Why aren't the resources the same?
That's a good question. It's a question that we're all asking. I think the Obama administration has done a good job with bringing HBCUs to the forefront. I know in my, you know, I'm not that old, but being an undergrad, I really didn't hear much about HBCUs unless you knew an alum. But now I feel that they're at the forefront and we're having those conversations in D.C. But unfortunately, HBCUs don't have the funding to be as progressive as the other universities. And what I mean by that is even for me, you know, when I was doing my college search, I wanted to attend Howard as well. But the other universities were mailing me stuff every day, T-shirts, calling me, visiting my school because they have those resources, opposed to where Howard, it might take them a little longer or might take an HBCU a little bit longer to get to you. So by that time, I had already committed to another institution. So I think it's declining because we're still trying to catch up and we don't even have the resources to catch up like we want to.
Dina Irvin, what does that statistic tell you? And what are your thoughts on this issue of why the lack of resources?
Well, I think the lack of resources is just, again, historical in our country. So you have institutions that have legacies, they have endowments, they've had the wealthiest people. When those alums pass on, they leave all their wealth to the university. And again, you have, you know, the other institutions that, like he said, are catching up. And that's, you know, and we see that even in our public school systems now. You're in one community and there's, you know, computers for everyone. And in another community, you know, you may get 10 computers, but no Wi-Fi. So, you know, we are accustomed to it. And I think that when you ask about your earlier question, attending an HBCU as opposed to contrast to a PWI.
And again, that's historically Black college or university as opposed to a predominantly white institution.
Yes, I can definitely say that it breeds a culture of you being able to compete and not rely on excuses and do more with less. And that is, you know, a culture for people of color anyway. But when you are at an institution, it is really something that is inbred in all of the students, is that you will succeed and you will. I was an accounting student at Prairie View A&M University, which is a part of the Texas A&M system. And when I first attended the university, or when I first got there, we were not a part of the system. And the Texas A&M University system took over as one of the, and we were just one campus of many. But we didn't have the resources. So you can go 45 miles down the left to College Station, Aggie Town, and you can have, you know, they own the city. But when you came to our campus, you know, if we got a brand new building, it was empty with no books. So again, professors know how to go above and beyond and make sure that the product they are producing, you will be productive. And that is the motto. Prairie View produces productive people. You will not have excuses. You will do more with less. And I think that if anything, it makes the graduate twice as great as their competition, because we had to do things the old fashioned way and we didn't have apps and resources at our disposal. So even now as an employer, I am always more open to the student that has had the greater struggle and can still compete and hold their own, because it says so much more about their fortitude and their dedication and their perseverance.
But is it a tough sell? I mean, when you're talking to students, and I want to ask this of both of you, because DeRico, you are also like your director of recruitment and new enrollment. So at Lincoln University, I'm curious about if that is a tough sell for students, like part of what you are going to be experiencing might be a character building experience involving fewer resources.
I would say it really depends on who you are as a person. And the young people say it's about, you know, being conscious. And you can definitely say, you know, what matters to me? It's just like now we have an election. Everyone has something that you agree with, and every candidate may have something that you don't agree with. However, you pick what issues are the most prevalent that will affect me or impact me and my family the most. And I think it's the same when you are a 17-year-old high school soon-to-be graduate. It's, you know, yes, college is where you go and learn and grow. I want to begin with the end in mind. Who's going to have a pipeline for jobs? Who's going to be able to connect me? Who's going to be able to adequately equip me with the technical skills that I need? However, recognizing the communities that I may come from or the supports that I may need academically, because maybe I wasn't in a a heavily resourced school, or maybe I learn better in a smaller environment, not saying it's less than, but just saying maybe I learn differently. Maybe I need that parental support. I might need professors who are going to bump into me at the game at an HBCU because they live on campus and they will treat you like the aunties and uncles and say, oh, you missed my class, and kind of get on you. Maybe I need that. So if I recognize what my needs are, which is what college is about, then I have to be honest with myself and say I might need to go somewhere where it's that type of nurturing and environment, as opposed to where I just kind of blend in. I'm out of my parents' home and I'm free and I have lots of responsibilities. And so what? My GPA may dip.
DeRico, is this a conversation that you do have with students about this issue of resources? Because when you talk about resources to market, I assume that declining enrollment, which we've talked about, also affects resources once students arrive.
Absolutely. And I would have to agree. I think when we're talking to students on the front end, and even when I used to be a recruiter for Marshall University, I talk about good fit, because sometimes students get attached to the name and the legacy of a university. But in reality, just because a university can fill up a stadium with over 200,000 people doesn't mean that's a good fit for you. How are you going to feel when you get to that campus? Are they going to be able to accommodate you? So as we're talking to students and even trying to figure out what's going to be a good fit, I just tell students, you know, narrow down to your top four, visit those campuses. Don't get attached to the hype and the glamour of an institution, because once you get to that campus, you'll see that, wait, my needs aren't being accommodated, or I'm not connected to the university, or I don't feel wanted. And then you're back at home the next semester and sort of starting all over again. So I really try to stress to students, it's all about where do you feel, what's going to be a good fit for you. You pick the institution based on your needs, not what the institution has to offer you, in a sense.
Dina, when you are talking to students about where they want to go to college, because you're part of connecting urban students with college, no matter what college that may be. But what is it, when you talk about pros and cons of historically Black colleges, what are those? Because we've been hearing all of the great things about them, but it can't all be in the pro column. Or maybe it is, but
I was going to say, you know, it really is. And I just had such an amazing experience, and you don't even realize how much it's impacted me. I have 4 degrees. I don't know that I ever, a day in my life, said, you know, I think my career dream job is to help other people with college. But when I look at, you know, my major was accounting. I was a state auditor in Texas, auditing all agencies and universities, traveling, paid budget, lots of travel, private planes. I mean, I've done so many things. But when I look at what stood out with my life and what made a difference, that said, you know what, half of these doors would never even be open for me. Then I have an MBA in entrepreneurship and nonprofit administration, then a master's in public administration, then a PhD in 2 different disciplines. None of the things that I get to do would be possible if I didn't have that self-pride and that love and all the nurturing that, to me, I never experienced it anywhere but those 4 years of college. And even after that, to go on to 3 graduate programs and still haven't had anything like it. So you can always pick a major, a vocation. You know, what you do is not who you are. But it impacted me in so many ways that it was like, you know, I try not to force my experience on other people. As long as you get to a college or a university, we support it wholeheartedly. But if I know that's the nurturing that you know, many of our students need and won't get anywhere else, even in corporate environment, you're fighting for the rest of your life to be validated.
Is there any part of you that thinks that part of the goal should also perhaps be to change what people are experiencing at other kinds of institutions? Because when you say these are the only 4 years of your life where you have experienced that kind of belonging and an environment that validated you, that to me is just incredibly sad.
But that is our reality. And that's the hard part. My organization is named Black and College Bound. And people always say, well, you know, why not everyone college bound? And I have to say, think about it from a gender perspective. Why do we have women in technology? Why are we doing girls who code and girls who run? Because we understand what it's like when it comes to our gender. So now think about that for, you know, the ethnic group that you're a part of. And then think about that for people like Black males who have, you know, who have it many different ways. They're always the less than and the other, the last and the least.
Ariane, we just have a moment left, but I'm curious whether anything you heard today is affecting your decision-making process.
I just feel like, well, I already knew everything that they already said, so not really, but yeah, I agree with everything that they said today. So,
well, good luck in your whole, college and in the decision-making process, everything else. Our time is up for this morning's conversations about students making decisions about college options. Arianne Hewitt, University Academy Senior, good luck with everything.
Thank you.
And Dr. Dina Irvin, CEO and founder of Black and College Bound, thanks for your time and insight.
Thank you.
DeRico Lynch, Director of Recruitment and New Enrollment at Lincoln University, thank you.
Thank you.
You can listen back to our discussion about historically Black colleges and universities or our earlier conversation about one student's journey from Mexico to the United States and from high school to college on our website, kcur.org/centralstandard. We'll have those ready for you later today. Tomorrow, we'll chat with the local author of a book about the queen of hip-hop soul, Mary J. Blige. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.